Oh. Hi, and welcome to a special occasion of Webcams TV. We're here in downtown Redmond, about to get shaved for Movember, which is pretty pretty exciting. Speaking of Movember, we have Melissa here from Microsoft Health Services, and she's going to give us a brief introduction as to what Movember is and why we're why Microsoft is participating.
Sure. So Movember is the month formerly known as November. And so men all over the world who want to participate start November 1st clean shaven and then basically become walking billboards for raising awareness about men's health and in particular prostate and testicular cancer and mental health awareness as well. So yeah, so you start growing your mustache, hence the reason why it's called Movember, so short for mustache, and then you raise money, and it's a big grassroots effort at Microsoft, and so we are part of the technology challenge on the Movember.com website. So we are competing against Amazon, Google, and all the other tech companies across the globe.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Can you give us a little bit of a background of Microsoft Health Services, what they provide for employees at Microsoft?
Yeah, so I am the wellness coordinator at the Living Well Health Center on campus, and we provide primary care, physical therapy, chiropractic services, health coaching, as well as a full pharmacy and lab services for the Microsoft employees on campus. So we're very much sponsoring men's health and awareness, and we can do annual physicals and exams. So take care to, promote your own health, fellas, and get your annual checkup.
Awesome. Thank you. So I guess we're going under
the knife
or the blade.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a quick cut, and we'll get all dressed up and suited up for some shaving. See you in a second. We're back and we're baby-faced.
Super Jeffy. Baby-faced for you.
Yeah, I know.
Look at
just
this.
A little bit.
You're so cute.
Thanks, man.
Nice.
So how do you feel?
I feel at least 5 years younger.
At least five? I feel like I'm 14 again.
You look like you're 14.
Welcome back to the studio. We just came in. Jeffy and I got our faces all shaved off, and we're ready to start growing out our nice mustaches for Movember. What kind of mustache are you going to go for?
The one on my lip.
That's a great mustache.
Yeah, so, and yourself?
I think I'm going to go with the classic stash. I'm going to see, because it's going to take me probably 28 days to get it grown. My mustache is the last thing that grows on my face,
nice.
So I'm going to start with the bottom of the handlebars, and then hopefully they'll actually meet at the middle at some point.
Nice. You could just grow your hair out and then comb it over your lip.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I am growing my hair out a little bit.
Yeah, and you're doing that for
Locks of Love.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
But yeah, big thanks to...
Yeah, big special thanks to the folks down at Rudy's that helped us out and shaved us down.
Yeah.
So awesome. Thank you so much for the support. And hopefully we'll raise a lot of money for Movember.
Yeah, and thanks to Melissa and the Health Center.
Yes.
And all their hard work at putting the Movember campaign together here for Microsoft. So
definitely cool. Thanks so much. Well, to carry on with the rest of our show, we're going to start off with a website Windows segment. Everyone loves it. We have Amit here, and you are on the websites team,
yeah,
obviously, but what part of the websites team?
So I'm a part of the Kudu team.
Okay.
Which is
so developer experience.
Developer experience.
Awesome, that's great. And what are you going to show us off today?
Okay, so today I'm going to show off some little known diagnostic tools that we have for the Azure websites. I'm going to start with my site. I have like a simple site that I've created, pre-created. I'm going to browse to it. This is just a simple site. And to get to that diagnostic tools, I'm going to use a site that every Azure website actually has, which is called the SEM site. So to get it, I just use my site name and add SEM. So the SEM site is under the HTTPS for protection. And we use basic auth in order to get in. Basically, that's your publish profile, publish setting. You just use your publisher username and password. So this portal is actually has all the tools that I've mentioned. And the nice thing about it that it's an open source. This means that you can actually go to Project Kudu under GitHub and see all this site, its source code, and make comments and your own suggestions in if you see something that is actually missing.
Yeah, the cool thing about this being open sourced is your team actually develops in the open. So new features that are coming that you're working on are available for you to view out on the Project Kudu GitHub page before they're actually incorporated into Windows Azure websites. And that's really exciting because I love to see things before they get released. It's really fun to see.
Yeah, and you can, we have help there on, you can actually get new things on your website even before we actually release it. Mm.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, well, there's two cool things. One, it doesn't only work in Azure, right? So you can actually deploy it out to Windows Server 2012, or I guess any Windows Server, really. Yeah. Or you can self-host the next piece, which is what you're just talking about, where you take the Kudu bits off of the GitHub account and push them up into your website, and then one of the lines of configuration just to say, this is where my Kudu engine is, yeah. Use this version instead.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so here you can see that's the build number. That's a way for you to know what if that's like a new Azure website's build. We also have like a site startup time, the main folder, a temporary folder. The first thing I'm going to show is the runtime environment. So here you can actually see your app settings that you set on Windows Azure. You can see your connection strings, environment variables, and some other like basic cool stuff, server variables that you can use for diagnostics. The next thing is the Diagnostics Console. So Diagnostics Console is basically a very simplified terminal that allows you to log into your website and do like basic commands. I'm going to show you. The most basic command would be like dir. You can go to your site, cd site. If you have a repository, you can go to your repository. You can do commands like git,
curl,
yep. Yeah. Even PowerShell would work. You can do xcopy or whatever. Just try it. Also here we have the like a basic file browser experience. So I can go to my www.root. And just take a file and drag and drop it.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's very convenient.
I can even edit it if I want to. Save it. I can go to my log files and I can download the entire directory and it's downloaded as a zip.
Cool.
Sweet.
So that makes a very nice experience as a like an FTP on your website, that would work on your tablet, that would work on your phone, or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is real, like, this experience right here is very similar to almost a graphical SSH, where you have the console right there, so you have shell access to kind of go and do some sort of diagnostic or change things directly on the disk. I actually use this quite a bit to go and set up different PHP versions. So I'll go in to this experience, use curl to download the next piece of PHP. There's an unzip utility on here where you can unzip files. And then I just go and use the Azure command line tools to go and set up the rest of the environment through there. So it's nice to be able to go in and script things out directly from a web interface. This is really, really cool stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't even know this existed. So like, I'm right now thinking I really need to do some work.
It's the best hidden feature.
Yeah.
It's like Easter egg.
One thing to note is that you can't actually get input from here. So if you have something that requires input, that won't work. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a very basic terminal experience. But it works for most parts.
Great.
And the last nice thing that I'm going to show is the process and min-dump. So those are APIs. Mm-hmm. You get back a JSON. I have here a plugin for Chrome that would actually show it in a better way. So this is actually a JSON blob shown nicely. So right now we only, I went into the processes to see all of my running processes. And right now I have only one, which is my SCM site. Mm-hmm. I can start browsing my site, and I'll refresh. Sorry. This is the process, the W3WP process that we're running on. If I would have started like other background processes, we would see them here.
Yeah.
I can go inside this process and see all the threads that are going on.
Cool.
I can see a process ID, and the really cool thing about it is I can download the mini dump from here, so I can debug it offline. Mm-hmm. I can go inside some random thread and see other interesting information.
So are there any tools that you suggest if you do go and download a mini dump? Do you have some tools that you'd actually end up using offline?
I would use Visual Studio to debug this.
Yep.
Other things we have here is like API for files, deployments if you use the source control.
What about webhooks there? I see that. That looks relatively interesting.
So webhooks, I would say it's a whole other topic.
Okay.
But we allow you to using, for example, a site such as Zapier to hook a post-deployment event into other actions. For example, you can set up, send me an email when my deployment is finished.
Cool. Or like send a tweet saying, hey, look at this new awesome feature on my website I just deployed.
Yes, definitely.
Excellent. That's really exciting. We'll have to get someone from your team on the show to kind of show that experience off. That sounds really cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. This is a great, great feature. As Jaffe pointed out, he's going to go try it out.
And absolutely.
Hopefully we can get you guys out there to try it out as well if you're going out and deploying to websites. Definitely very, very valuable to kind of go out and find out what's going on with your website, being able to interact with the file system in real time. That's really, really important for when you're trying to go through and debug apps. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
And we'll head off to the feature presentation in a few short seconds here.
And now, our feature presentation. Coming soon to video cassette.
Cool. Welcome back for the feature presentation. We have Pranav Marley here, and he's going to be showing off some really awesome stuff with ASP.NET and identity.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, before we get into this really quick, you are in costume, and we were supposed to be in costume for this episode because it is Halloween, and I didn't wear mine, but just so you all know what you're missing, this was going to be on my head today for this show.
That's why I got a sword for exact this thing.
Nice. Anyway, so
we're peaceful people.
So he did what he was supposed to.
Peace.
I didn't.
Peace.
Corey didn't.
I dress up 365 days a year.
Right. That's right.
Well, you can have one of the beads from the swig.
Oh, well,
if you want, you can have red. You can have black. Like,
you can make a little rat tail.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna go there.
No.
Go there.
You know, you've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I lived through the 80s. Sad time. So what do you have to show
history
off?
Repeat of it. All right. History repeat all itself. Right. So I kind of play around in the beard. All right, no. So I'm going to be showing you today the identity space in ASP.NET. Like, a lot of cool things happened when we released Visual Studio 2013 RTM. Like, we booted the whole membership system, the security system. Folks have come on the show, like Dan came by and talked about Web API and stuff. Yeah. So in this show, I'm going to be talking to you about the investments that we've made in our good old membership system. Like, we've had ASP.NET membership since Tubo days, since the SQL membership providers, mm-hmm. and the login controls, register controls, which did an awesome job for the last 10 years. But, you know, web advances, it's been 10 years since we came out with the stack. And we learned a lot of lessons. We heard a lot of feedback. And we started this ASP.NET identity project to sort of address most of these common pain points that we've heard along in terms of the membership support story. Like, if you look at how apps are built today, like, people want to have social logins as part of their site. They want to have people log in with Facebook. They want to, like, retrieve their friends' pictures and, like, post back to the Facebook wall. So they want this right niche immersive experience in their application. So the old membership system was, you know, not too great. It was great for logging with by creating a local account in the site. Mm-hmm. But plugging in Facebook, not so good. And there are certain other things which, you know, as the web has evolved, like new patterns came up, or people like to have unit testability in their applications. Yeah. In the old SQL provider, you could do this, but you had to throw a lot of exception. It was harder. And this new stack sort of integrates well with your MVC application, so you get unit testability as one of the core pivots. Cool. And so I'm going to be showing you about, like, these, what does ASP.NET identity means, like, what are some of the feature set that we have. I'm not going to go into all of the feature set because that's an exercise for the readers. We want you to do something after you watch this over here. So I'm going to be just sort of briefly walking you over the feature set and what the space the ASP.NET identity project is going to address. And so before I start, I would like to highlight everyone who wants to get started with identity to go to asp.net/identity, where you'll find all documentation. There's a nice introduction article about identity, which I wrote. <It's> quite convenient. No, like me. It was written by me, John Galloway, Tom, and Rick, a few people from our team. So the interesting thing about this article is it talks a lot about membership as a background. Like, what was the membership story in 2.0? How did it evolve? Why did it evolve? Like, why did we make some decisions when we use new systems? And why are we doing ASP.NET identity?
Right.
And it has some getting started tutorials as well for people who want to get started. And another critical doc that we are pushing out, and we're going to push out more, is migrations. Like, whenever we come out with something new, the first question that we get slammed with is like, it's awesome, this is great, but I already have an app. What do I do? How do I get to this new bits? I want to, but how do I? And we've not done a great job, like, I would say, over the period of years, but this time we are effectively trying as a team to come up with good migration stories. So this tutorial, for example, tells you how to migrate from SQL membership to ASP.NET identity. So it gives you the SQL scripts that are required. And it walks you through an entire experience. So hopefully you find this useful, and you can provide us with feedback, and we can iterate on this doc to see how the migration would look like.
Cool, love it. We'll make sure that we get the link for this in the show notes. I also find it ironic that you're in a incognito window when we're talking about identity.
Yes. It's safe. Never let cookies get stored on your machine. So this identity system is part of the whole One ASP.NET story in ASP.NET. A lot of folks have sort of talked about One ASP.NET. It's all about providing a unified story for our stack across all of the investments that we have to offer. So it doesn't matter if you're a web forms developer, MVC developer, web API developer, you're building spy apps or Facebook apps, you can still use the underlying components in everywhere. So you can use ASP.NET identity in any application that you write, pretty much. You can start by creating a WebForms project or an MVC project, and you would get the same benefit. So let's create an MVC application. And let me show you quickly how one of the pivots that we've sort of heard a lot is, well, a membership system is great for storing user information, and you should make it easier for me to be able to store user information. So for example, in this application, let's say if I launch my application and I register, and you think about traditional applications where you go and sign up for an account, the sign up process is a little more involved because it'll ask you a bunch of questions. Apart from your username and password, how do you want to have other data as well? So for example, in this form, I'm starting with just what's your email, what's your password, and what's your current password, and that's it. So I'm going to go ahead and create an account for myself on the site. But let's say I wanted to start building an application where I wanted to ask you for more information. So let's say I want you to enter your hometown once you log in. So what I can do now with this new membership system is I already have my application user. So underneath the covers, we use Entity Framework Code First as a programming model for storing your information. So I already have my application DB context, which is derives from a DB context, which stores my membership tables for me. So I can quickly come over here, and I can say, you know, my user should have a hometown property as well. And I can build my application. And I can make use of Entity Framework Code First migrations as a way to update my schema. Since I added a hometown property, I want to update my schema so that the user, when the user information gets stored, the hometown information also gets stored.
Right.
So what I'm walking you through is an experience of how you can add hometown to your user model as well. And I want you to think about the experience that you would have by doing this when you were dealing with SQL membership and SQL databases and stuff. You probably had to like plead your admin like, hey, I'm modifying one of my schema. Is it okay? And I'm sure your DB admin would have been super happy. Like, you can party with my database as much as you like. So what I just did, I added a migration for hometown. So the next time when their project starts, it's going to add an entry for a hometown field in my schema. I'm going to make a quick change in my UI so that I can accept hometowns as well. So in my register view model, I'm going to add a view property called hometown. Hometown, and build it. And then I can drop down to my register view and add a hometown field over here. So all the templates also are based on Bootstrap. So we just did a show.
A couple weeks. You just did a show on Bootstrap, actually.
I didn't say that. But yeah, we did a good show on Bootstrap.
What are you talking about? This is Pranav Marley.
The other
Pranav was on the show recently.
The smart one.
The smart one. The one which is not red, yeah. So I'm going to drop down to my register action in my MVC controller. And when I create my user, I'm just going to basically set the hometown property to the property that I get from my model. And if I launch my application and cross my fingers.
For those of you at home, we didn't fast forward this at all. This is actually Pranav in real time.
He's speedy. Yeah, that's a new one now. So I can create a new account over here. My hometown is Seattle. My super strong password, as nobody can guess, has to be 6 characters.
Oh, no.
Oh, awesome.
Wah, wah, wah.
I forgot to run. I want to say update database, because there's no magic. You have to run the command yourself. And I say update database. Oh, yes. So at this point, I do have to start off fresh, because the database has sort of entered an invalid state. So if I were to just sort of rev up my database version, and this one, you don't need that.
We can do this too if you need to.
Yeah. So if I just rev my database version, launch my application again. Oh, this is what happens when you go fast.
No, but you know what? It's not a bad thing, because you get to see, like, what if somebody runs into this issue? We get to see what your little solution to it, for it was. Mm.
So I had forgotten to update the database. And in fact, this is one of the questions that we get a lot on Stack Overflow as well. Hey, I tried all the steps, but they forgot just one step of updating the database. And they entered a state where the database is not right. So what do you do in that case, basically? So if I look my database and my users table, so I'll see hometown as one of the fields. And if I say show table data, there's my hometown, Seattle.
Great.
So, you know, as you get started with the identity system, you'll realize like very basic operations like how do I extend the profile system, how do I make it easier, sort of become first class citizen. In the new identity system.
This is really nice, because I remember when I was doing properties for user management before, it used to just be a big property bag, and everything got saved to a single column.
Yes.
And then you had to go through and basically parse out all of the different properties. So it's nice to see that it's actually building out the columns and the tables here, now that you're taking advantage of the
code first,
EF migrations code, and all that. Yep.
Because, you know, back in the days, we had those anonymous objects like profile bags and like defining your web config. And then you go into like your class and like, oh, man. And if you want to write like, you know, very minimalistic applications where you want to mix your application data with your user data, which is like you build a to-do application, you want to associate users with a list of to-dos. Like, this is pretty like
If you had an application and one of the pages only needed one piece of those properties, you were pulling back the whole column, parsing through it and everything. So this is nice and lean. Like, you can pull back exactly what you need, and it should speed up your applications a little bit.
That's a great point, because now we are also based on EF code first, so you can lazy load some of the entities and not load your entire collection. Yep. So that is a great point about the membership system. So another cool thing that we did as part of this identity work is, like, what I showed you just now was, you know, how do I take my application and how do I persist the data in a SQL Server database? But a lot of people have asked this question, like, man, I want to change the persistence model. I don't want to change my application. Like, I don't want to change my accounts controller. I just want to change where it gets stored. Like, I don't like SQL. I want to move to Azure. I want to move to CRM. I want to move to SharePoint, like different kinds of solutions. So what we've done as part of the identity system is persistence is one of the key goals of the identity system. So you can swap out the persistence layer and replace it with something else like Azure Table Storage, RavenDB, MongoDB, NoSQL, and your application code does not have to change. So just an example, like if I look at this application, my accounts controller register method looks like this. You know, I new up an application user, I call the identity system to create a user, and I sign in, and that's it. And in my accounts controller registration, I basically specify that I'm going to use an application user, and that's it. So I'm going to show you an application which uses the same structure but persists the information in Azure Table Storage. So let me run this application first, and then I'll quickly show you what the code looks like. So this is Control F5. My Azure Storage emulator is started. So I can come over here and register. What's the name? Corey
Boobopadoo.
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 You might want to save that to your clipboard.
Hey, you have signed in as Corey Boobopadoo. Now, if I go back to my application and I expand my Windows Azure in the Server Explorer, I can say storage. In this case, I'm using an Azure Table Storage in my local instance. I see my identity. I can view the table. And I can see Corey Boopapadoo as one of the users in my application. And if I switch back to my application, let's look at the register. So in my registered code, it's pretty much the same. Instead of an application user, I'm using an Azure user, like which is an Azure type. And I have the same create async call, and I sign in the same way. The only change I had to do was basically in my accounts controller, instead of registering a user manager, which takes in a user EF specific store, I take in an Azure specific store.
Okay.
So I basically plugged in my own implementation of persistence, which is Azure. But my application code, for the most part, stays the same. It's only I chose basically what should be my persistence mechanism. So
cool.
We made it really easy to sort of plug
super
in.
Super easy.
Super easy. Yeah, that's a good word. Like, yeah. We made it super easy to plug in like non-relational databases, Azure Table Storage, and this, the first class is in the membership in the identity system.
So it's really cool that we've gone and we've abstracted away the storage. Is that something that you implemented yourself, or do we actually have like an Azure Store provider that we ship out of box today?
So this is something that we I implemented on my own, mm-hmm. and our thought is like. We envisioned that ecosystem would evolve around the identity system where a lot of people would write their own providers, and hopefully we have like a sort of community project going forward where people can check in their RavenDBs, their like MongoDBs, Azure Table, and it becomes a repo where you can pull in what you want.
Yeah.
So cool. That's how we envision this this ecosystem to grow.
I can hear everyone out there screaming to me right now. It's just, they're echoing in my head, and all they're saying is, show me the codes.
So let me quickly show you the code as well, okay? So what I did was, so you can think of the identity system as pivoted into like the following four quadrants. There's the concept of a user, concept of a role, concept of logins, like how can I log in? I can log in with the username password, or I can log in with social providers like Facebook and stuff. So there's a concept of login. So there are like three fundamental pivots, and each of them are basically classes. And the identity system has interfaces over all these pivots. So for example, I implemented Azure Role, I implemented Azure Login, and I implemented Azure User as well. And what it basically does is like, what should be my ID, what should be my roles, what should be my claims, what should be my logins, and that's it.
Cool.
And the code to basically persist is in the stores. So for example, I implemented my Azure Store, and when I create a user, let's quickly look at the create call. Azure Store. Ha! I go to my table client, and I basically do my, I call into the Azure SDK to sort of create entries in the table. If it doesn't exist, I can go create users and stuff, basically. So create async is a call which inserts a user into the Azure Table Storage. So
cool.
Like, wow. Nothing pretty fancy. So you choose your persistence layer, and you choose what the programming model looks like for that as well. You know, for this create async would look drastically different on RavenDB or MongoDB and stuff. Mm-hmm.
But it's nice that the identity framework is nice and lightweight. You just have to provide three things, and away you go.
Yes.
That's really nice.
The core set of interfaces is fairly lightweight. It just connects the boxes together. And our majority of our implementation is the EF layer, which sort of brings everything together, adds validation. But then you can replace the EF layer with something else, and you get still get all the benefits.
Cool.
Nice.
So another like cool thing that we sort of did was, let's see if we did that correctly. So all that I'm showing you right now is something that we've already released as a V1. Of our stack, which got released in VS 2013. So let me show you how you can build from the default templates that we ship for MVC and web forms and add social logging to your site. So you can add like Facebook, you can add Google, and then how do you take the step further along and build a more richer experience? And let's see how you can get more information about Facebook, basically. So in this example, you're seeing that I can only log in with a username and password. Mm-hmm. And if I have to enable social login, I can go back to my website, and I can open this file called startupauth.cs, which is where we define all of our configuration on what auth do I have in my project. Do I have local auth? Do I have external auth? Mm-hmm. Do I have Google? Do I have Facebook and stuff? So I can just drop down over here, and I can say enable Google auth. And if I refresh, you will see that now I have an option of logging in via Google.
I love the fact that it's one line of code, and it's already sitting in there, and you just have to like uncomment the line.
Yeah,
that's
it. Great for discoverability, so you don't have to go and research and figure out what things do I have the ability to extend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You just go straight into that CS file, uncomment a line of code, and you have it.
And then, oops. Oh, yeah, that's because I have Facebook code running in this application. Ah. So let me show you Facebook as well. So if you notice, like Google, I had to just uncomment one line and I was done. So Google is an open ID provider, which does not take in the keys. In the example of Facebook, it's a little more involved because I'm showing you a lot of things in this example. So let's take a step back and see what's happening. So what I'm saying is I am enabling Facebook auth, and I'm saying whenever a user logs in via Facebook, retrieve his email, his hometown, his friend's information, his friend's photos, because I want to build an application which displays the pictures of my friends. Mm. So the first time when a user logs in, I'm going to get all these scopes for the user if the user grants access to my permission. So you, if you log in, you can say, if you trust the site, hey, I know this is written by Corey Booba Badu. And so I trust the guy, and I trust the guy that is in a good site. So hey, you have access to my friend's information. So I add all my scopes over here, and I have to specify an app ID and an app secret. So this is telling Facebook that, hey, Facebook is authenticating this app, right, and Facebook is going to trust this app. So it's a secret handshake between Facebook and myself. I am going to delete the keys as soon as I'm done with the demo, so you can't hack the site. And I've hooked into an event called unauthenticated. So what's going to happen in this case is when I click login via Facebook, it's going to go to Facebook. Facebook is going to come back to my app. And once I'm authenticated, it's going to give me a chance to get the data from the Owen middleware and push it back to the app. Mm-hmm. So as part of the 2013 release, you know, we rebooted our security story. It's now based on Owen. It's no longer based on Forms Auth module. So we have Owen middlewares running in the pipeline. And so unauthenticated is a way where I can flow information from the Owen middlewares back to the application. Right. And I'm going to retrieve the Facebook access token, which I'm going to use later on to get more data out of Facebook. Right. So let's run this site and see what happens from a UI flow. And I'll show you what the code looks like for getting the Facebook data as well. Ta-da-ta-da-ta-da. So log in. So in this case, you see I have two buttons, so I can choose to log in via Facebook and Google, which also is a good point because a lot of people have multiple identities, and you know, you can choose what you want to have, or you can link multiple identities to your same account as well.
Multiple online identities.
Multiple online. So I can say my. So if you look at Stack Overflow, they do that. Like you know, I have multiple identities, online identities, and I can choose to associate, disassociate. Are you making fun?
Please track these cookies.
I'm making a horrible joke about a disorder.
So, oops, yes, username is already taken. So let me save.
MC Jaffe.
Oh, Lord.
Well, there we go.
It says Facebook info. Yes. Look at that. So these are all my so-called friends.
You're doing really well. Oh, there's more.
Actually, like,
I thought it was just those. I was like, who's a popular guy?
Yes, I need more friends on Facebook. Please do friend me on Facebook. This is from a wedding that I had gone to last couple of weekends back. So I was a best man at the wedding. It was a beautiful wedding in Seattle.
Nice.
This is Syed. It's a crazy Syed.
One of the many faces of Syed.
This is one of the many faces of Syed, actually. Yeah. So, you know, I can just keep scrolling over here. But the point being, I'm sort of displaying all of my friends' pictures, basically, over here. So if I look back at the code that I had to write, so in my accounts controller, I have the Facebook, not this project, 181.
There it is.
So when I click the Facebook info link, I basically get the claims for the user. I get the Facebook access token, which I had passed from the Owen middleware to the application. Mm-hmm. And I use a library called Facebook C# SDK, which takes in a Facebook token, calls the Facebook endpoint, and gives you the information that you want. And it's a dynamic library, so I get like a JSON result pretty much. And I can iterate over it and sort of choose what I want. In this case, I basically took the pictures of my friends.
Right.
So, you know, you can start from something very basic where you just go to your application and say enable social login by Google, or you can do something very fancy where you could say enable Facebook, hey, retrieve me all the friends' pictures and display all the friends' pictures. And you can take this experience a lot more further by saying post on the wall or leave them comments and they can come and leave comments. Nice. So you can make a fairly interactive application or a game, anything that you want it to be.
So just to kind of step back and slow this down a little bit, when I go and I actually go and enable one of these providers, I do always have to have that step where I'm pulling the token out of the OWN middleware to provide to my application?
No.
Like if I just went and said, use Google Auth.
So if you just send Google Auth, you can just log in via Google and you're done. Right. It's only when you want to get more information other than what we get you for default. Like by default, we'll get you your username, your last name, and that's it. Okay. But you know, that's
so
boring.
So if you had like a different name for a UID, like one of the unique identifiers, you'd have to pull that data in order to get access to it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's a good thing to keep track of, because if you don't know what the defaults are, or if you're doing something that kind of goes beyond what the defaults are, it's a good thing to know what the defaults are so you can actually go in and pull the rest of those claims out.
Right. Yes. Yes. And so so the other cool thing that I'll actually love to show over here, so everything that I showed you is like V1. And what we ship with V1 is like, you know, this is the foundation that we want to build upon the awesome set of features. And here's an example. And this is something that we are working on, which will go on in a future update. The nightly builds of these NuGet packages are available, so you can go try it out.
But you saw it here first on Channel 9.
But actually, you are the first people who are seeing it on Channel 9. In fact, this is heart of the developers. Press.
Robert's going to run over to my office and go, what do you mean you're showing off good stuff? I'm the visual studio. That's right. I'll take the heat. Hopefully you all enjoy it.
So in this application, if I sort of come over here and I say register a new user, it's going to go, again, sort of create the account. Da-da-da-da-da-da. That's what happens. And if I switch back to my email, outlook.com.
Bright green, love it.
So I just got a confirmation email saying that I need to confirm my account before I can do anything with my site.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you can expect, like, this is a very common flow when you sign up for new sites, you're like, you should confirm your account or verify your email before you can do anything with your site. So if you're a to-do app, you cannot create to-dos until you confirm your account. So I can copy this link, and pardon my email formatting skills, because clearly they are not the best.
Yeah, I didn't want to say.
Longest hash token ever.
It's secure. You want secure sites. So it says, OK, now you've confirmed your account. Do you want to log in? Let's say, please do log in. But let's say,
in order to generate a token that long, you would need a dog, a cat, and a unicorn to walk across your keyboard.
So absolutely.
It's definitely very secure.
I've got the unicorn thing down. Yeah. I don't have the other two.
So, you know, so I can log in with the same account. My account is confirmed. But the other thing that I can do as well is now I can come and sort of say, hey, what if I forgot my password? So I lost my password, but I know my email. So I can say submit. And it says, check your email.
So what we're showing off here is
So what are we showing off over here is two features that we've added post V1. These are called forget password and account confirmation. And what happens basically as part of our template flow is, and these features will be baked into the templates as well. And so what happened when I said, you know, forgot password is basically it took my email and it generated me a unique token and it checked if my account is confirmed. Yes, I did confirm my account the first step. Mm-hmm. And then it says, generate me a reset password token and send me an email. And sending email is pretty cool as well because I'm not hooking up SMTP into my site.
Right.
What I'm doing is I'm using SendGrid to send an email. And SendGrid is a service that you can go up to Azure and you can sign up for it. Right. And you sign up for it, I think you get about 25,000 emails a month, which is, you know, pretty good for a small
free tier. Almost enough for me.
Almost enough for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm using SendGrid, like, but the beauty of it is like this is three lines of code of sending an email and no hassles of setting up an SMTP server. Like my web config doesn't have those weird settings as well.
You spelled toenail wrong.
Yes. It's now toenail.
My proud moments.
Your proud moments. There it goes. So reset password comes again. My awesome emailing skills. I can go back, I can say Parag, and boom, I can say my email and my password, which is my new password, and reset. And
can you set it so that that token it sends you is actually just a link? So you just click on the token?
Absolutely.
And it takes you there?
So the reason I got this big link mm-hmm. was because my message in my awesome SendGrid is just message.
Right.
I should have been smarter and said, href equals this link, and here's the text of the link.
And now you will.
But now I learned my lesson. I can always
That's
learn something
from it. Hasn't been released yet.
That's why, exactly. But this is something like fresh off the developer's box.
This
I think
awesome.
It just got checked in like yesterday night. And I was trying it out, and I was like, I just wanted to get it to work, man.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, it's working. So, you know, as the point I'm trying to make over here is like, as we release V1, like there's going to be a lot of these improvements that are going to keep coming.
Yeah.
And they're going to come fast. Like, we don't have to wait a year. Like, all these NuGet packages, you can go down to the gallery and get the nightly builds, or you can get the previews from NuGet. And so you can expect us, like, in a couple of months, we add something else, like two-factor auth, or we can be a lot more creative in how we push down these features. So that's the beauty of this model, basically. Is
super nice. Super
it's
nice.
Super, super nice.
Awesome.
I think that's one of the big powers of NuGet, is the fact that it enables you guys to just go and deliver things on a regular basis and mm-hmm. update.
Yes.
Yeah.
Early and often. It's good.
Going back to the sort of the site itself on ASP.NET/identities, where you know you can come over here, sort of get introductions. We'll try to push more and more docs over here. If you have questions that you want to ask us, then you can go to Stack Overflow. Our tag is ASP.NET-identity. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of traffic that's sort of coming in. Like, how do I do a bunch of these things? Cool. Web Dev Blog has an interesting post. In fact, I strongly encourage, and I think we'll have links to all of these sections at the end of our
That's correct.
Talk. But this is a good post to read, like, how do I build a simple to-do application and add roles? How do I authorization? Mm-hmm. How do I block parts of my application so that only users with certain roles can access it, or only certain users can access it? That's a great post that sort of talks about it.
Cool.
So I'll end with this message that, you know, we released a good foundation. Try it out, give us feedback. Do expect a lot of improvements coming to the stack in an iterative fashion, and then we hope that you sort of like this investment as well.
Yeah.
I want to echo one thing that we said earlier, is there's a great area here for community involvement where you can go out and make those Azure providers or Redis provider
right.
or any provider to be able to hook the identity model into. I think that's a great action item. So if any of you are interested in a particular data store, it'd be a great idea to go and hook in and create your own data provider for
that. Yeah,
absolutely.
And shoot me an email or like reach me via Twitter. The links will be there after the show. Like, you know, we can partner up and we can figure out what the right way to collect all this information would be, basically.
Great.
Yep.
Jaffe, do you have anything else to add?
So now is the time.
This is a great time.
I add anything.
Yeah, you can just go through and pull your list out, check it off, naughty or nice.
So we've got all the links for the show.
You can kill like
seriously.
Right now.
We got all the links for the show down the bottom. Comments, please leave some comments. And be constructive with your comments, right? We just want to hear good feedback. It doesn't matter if it's has a feature request or a thought, you know, but be positive here. We want to get some good comments going and good conversation going and make good products coming forward, right?
Yeah.
And then also, to reiterate from the beginning of the show, Movember, starting the month of November, clean shaven starting tomorrow, just grown out a mustache for the whole month of November for men's health awareness, primarily prostate cancer, testicular cancer.
Yeah.
And then there's the 5K runs, the mustache dash.
Mustache dash?
Mustache-dash.com. That link will be in the bottom to participate in the 5K runs. And I don't know.
So Jaffe and I are actually going to be on the Movember site. So we'll have a link below where you can go check out our progress. If you follow us here every week, you'll probably be able to see our mustaches start to take off. Mine, I mean, you're going to see mine near the end of November. It's
nice. You can borrow.
It's not going to grow. Yeah, you're going to have to. I'll come in with something stuck to my face and go, guys, I tried.
That's all
I'm
got.
Sorry.
Nice.
Yeah, but. Awesome. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Please leave some comments below, and hopefully we'll see you next time here on WebCamps TV.
See you guys.